Hello and welcome back to Talking Talmud. I'm Ann Gordon here with my friend and Chavruta Yerdana Azband, our daf of the day, Masechet Bava Metzia, daf Nun Tet, page 59. So 59 is one of these chock full dapim. It is rich and it is famous, and I don't say that lightly. I think that this is a story that many, many, many of our co-learners will already know. But I'm actually going to hit the Gemara before that story kicks in. Yerdana, I know you'll pick it up. On Amar Aleph, but moving down Amar Aleph, we have Amar Rabbi Chananya Breder of Idi, Rav Kinana, sorry, Breder of Idi, my diftiv lo tonu ishet amito. So Rav Kinana wants to know what's the meaning of what it says in the Torah, in Vayikra 25, Leviticus 25, it says, a person will not mistreat his colleague or his fellow. So the point here is that when the people who are with you in keeping Torah and mitzvot, you don't mistreat them. And Rav says that a person has to be careful not to mistreat his wife, since she, and forgive me, this is what the Gemara says, right? That she is easily brought to tears. And so the punishment for the man who mistreats her is immediate, meaning in her tears, he is therefore punished. Rabbi Elazar says that since the time that the temple, the Beit HaMikdash, was destroyed, the gates of prayer were locked, which means that the tefillot themselves, the prayers themselves, were not accepted as readily or as easily as they were back in the time of the temple. Shne'amar, gam ki azak v'ashavea, Satam Tfilati. Right, this is a verse from Lamentations from Eichel that we read on Tisha B'Av, on the 9th of Av. Though I plead and I call out, he shuts out my prayer. Even though the gates of prayer are locked, the gates of tears are not. So this verse is now from Psalms, from Tehillim 39, where it says, hear my prayer, Lord, give ear to my pleading, don't keep silent at my tears. And the implication then is that there is still a way to reach out to God, you know, through tears. So each of these points, I think, honestly, is worth a deep dive discussion in and of itself, but we have so much to cover, we're going to kind of rush through it and leave you to discuss amongst yourselves, because it is that worthy. Again, I apologize here. These are the words of the Gemara, where Rav says, anyone who follows the advice of his wife goes down into Gehinom. Gehinom, Gehenna, is kind of the Talmudic term for hell, whatever that might mean. And then the Gemara says that there's nobody like Achav, the biblical Achav, who, you know, fell into bad ways, in particular because of the counsel of his wife, Jezebel. And Jezebel, even the word has become, you know, the meaning becomes a reference to a wicked woman. Rav Papa says to Abaye, but don't people say, if your wife is short, bend down, stoop, and whisper to her and consult with her. Meaning, what does this mean that you shouldn't be consulting with your wife? Of course you should be consulting with your wife. What kind of thing is this? Lo kashya, haba mile de alma, v'haba mile de beta. So the Gemara says, no, it's different kinds of things. Rav is talking about general matters, and the idea of, you know, in fact, consulting with her is specifically in household matters. Again, this is clearly one of those Gemaras that's a product of its time. I would suggest that there are things that, you know, beyond the household matters, that it makes sense to consult with your wife. Again, we could say this is a distinction between matters of the heavens and matters of the general matters of the world. They're trying to resolve when one, you know, should be consulting with one's wife and when that gets one into trouble. Rav Chista picks up the issue of the gates of heaven being locked, except for the gates of prayer for the victims of Ninalim Chutz Mishare Ona'ah, those who have been subject to Ona'ah, some kind of being taken advantage of or exploitation, as we've been talking about Ona'ah in a monetary sense for quite some time now. And this is the backdrop, right? I mean, we're still in Bav Metzia. This is still the discussion that's going on at hand. We come then to a statement, a general statement by Rabbi Abau, Amar Rabbi Abau Shlosha, Ein Hapragod Nin Al Bifneham. There are three before whom that curtain, right, that God's listening, are not going to be locked, namely Ona'a, somebody who's been mistreated, or somebody who's been stolen from, Gezel Avodah Zarah, somebody who has been somehow a victim here of idol worship, right? And then each one gets his biblical verse to support why these are still extant, you know. Okay, the Gemara goes on here. We have some nice statements about making sure that we're always ready to provide tzedakah, and so on. And again, the honor of one's wife. But I'm going to stop here to turn the Gemara, to turn our discussion over here to Yardena. And hopefully by the end, we'll understand why all of this backdrop is on this daf, this Amud, as precursor to the story that follows.
Okay, and I think the reason why, Anne, you needed to do that introduction is the story that we're going to read, which is Tanur Shel Agnai, which I would sort of put in the category of, like, you know, 10 most famous stories from the Gemara that get quoted often. What most people quote about this story is actually not the point of the story. Most people are going to quote a line that we're going to read later, which says, Lo b'shamayim hi, the idea that the Torah gets decided by the rabbis, but not really like by God, you know, not by God outside of this world, that the Torah is meant to be decided by the people who practice it. But the context of the story is actually something totally different. The context of the story is to tell us an incident that happened where a particular Tana was greatly offended because people were not careful with how they treated him. And so this is the story that we're going to have here, right? So it says Tanan Hatam, and this is actually a Mishnah in Kalim, Perek 5, Mishnah 10, which says, Chatacho Chuliot. If somebody cuts sections from an oven, the Natan Chul Bein Chulia LeChulia, and puts sand between the sections, basically to cement them together, right? And then the oven comes in contact with something Tame, Rabbi Eliezer Mitahir, Rabbi Eliezer says that actually this oven is still Tahor. And the Chachamim say that it is Tameh. Now, what this has to do with, and this I don't want to spend as much time on, but this is the Tanur Shel Agnai. It's a particular type of oven, and it's an oven that essentially was taken apart and then put back together. And so the question becomes, if it's something that comes back together, right, is it something that becomes a new kli and can be, can contract Tuma? And Rabbi Eliezer basically holds that it cannot. Rabbi Eliezer basically holds that this type of oven doesn't have the same status as a regular oven, okay? And therefore, it would remain tahor. That's basically the idea here, because since that cement was never banked, the oven basically has the status of what's called a kli adama. It's an unbaked earthenware utensil, which is not susceptible to tuma. Okay, so that's the technical halachic piece of what this is discussing. And now the thing we need to know is Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua are going to be the two major Tanaim in this story, at least at the beginning. Rabbi Akiva will be important later on. They're second generation Tanaim. Rabbi Eliezer, you know, who we've seen before, he kind of has a particular personality, is a little bit harsh. He's of the school of Beit Shammai, and Rabbi Yeshua is the school of Beit Hillel. Remember, Rabbi Yeshua is who we saw in that story in Brachot on Daf Kaf Zayin Amud Bet through Kaf Chet Amud Aleph, where Rabbi Gamliel II continually insulted him, and he was kicked out of being the Nasi. And so I think that's also an interesting context here, because here the context for this story is how Rabbi Eliezer gets treated, right? Whereas the context of that other story in Brachot is how Rabbi Yeshua gets treated, okay? So that's the basic setup here of this Mishnah. Vizeku Tanur Shel Agnai. And this is called an oven of what literally translates as a coiled serpent. The Gemara then says, Mai Agnai, what's a coiled serpent? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Rav Yehuda said in the name of Shmuel, Shehi Kifu Dvarim Ba'achna Zo V'timuhu. Right? It means that the sages surrounded Rabbi Eliezer with discussions like this coiled snake, and then declared it to Tuma. So in other words, the first explanation we have about what this means is it doesn't have anything to do with the actual oven itself, but it has to do with what type of debate this sparked between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer, and the way the Chachamim sort of went after Rabbi Eliezer, because he said it was Tachor and they said it was Tameh. and they were like coiled serpents. So it goes on and says, Tana, a braisa tot, beoto yom hishiv Rabbi Eliezer kol tishbot shabalam. On that day, okay, Rabbi Eliezer answered all the arguments in the world, basically defending why he had a lenient ruling that this oven stays tahor. Velo kiblu hemenu, but the sages did not accept them. Amar lahem, Rabbi Eliezer said to them, im halacha kimoti, if the halacha is like me, charuv ze yochiach, let this carob tree prove it. Nakar charuv mikomo mea ama. And so what happened? The carob tree that's outside of the Beit Midrash uproots itself from its place and it moves 100 amos. I mean, literally, something out of the ordinary happens. Something that is not within nature happens. But amrila arba ma'ot ama. And some say that it actually moved 400 amos. Amrulo, the sages said to Rabbi Eliezer, and the vi'in raya mina charuv, you can't bring a proof from a carob tree. Chazar v'amar lahem, he then goes back to them and he says, im halacha kamoti, amat amayim yochichu. If the halacha is like me, let the water canal prove it. Chazru amah amayim lachariyam. So the water in the water canal started to flow backwards. Amrulo, the sages then again said to Rabbi Eliezer, im vi'in raya me amat amayim. You cannot bring proof from a water canal. So then Rabbi Eliezer says to them again, if the halacha is like me, let the walls of the study hall prove it. He too kotle beit hamidrash lipol. So the walls of the study hall leaned in and began to fall. Ga'ar behem Rabbi Yeshua. And then Rabbi Yeshua comes and he rebukes the walls. Amar lahem, he says to them, im tamidei chachamim netzachim ze et ze bahalacha. If Torah scholars sort of fight with each other in a discussion of halacha, right? Atem mativichem. What business is it of yours? Lo naflu mipenek vodosho Rabbi Yeshua, velo sakfu mipenek vodosho Rabbi Eliezer. So the walls didn't fall out because of respect for Rabbi Yeshua, but they didn't write themselves out of respect for Rabbi Eliezer. So I think a good picture, you know, like this is, you know, a scene from a movie almost with magic where like the walls are sort of half caving in. But Adayin Matim Bomdim, and they still continue to lean to this day. Now, I don't know if that literally means that it continues to lean to this day, but I think what it does come to say is that this tension between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua, this is the type of tension that still exists to this day. Chazar v'amar lahem, so then Rabbi Eliezer says to the sages, im halacha kamoti, if the halacha is like me, min hashamayim yochichu, let heaven prove it. Yet the bakol, right? So we know our bakol comes, which we know is always sort of a heavenly voice that comes out that observes or tells us something about reality that we would not be able to just observe ourselves. V'amra, and what does the bakol say? Ma lachem etzel Rabbi Eliezer. What do you have with Rabbi Eliezer? Shehalacha kamuto b'kol makom. The halacha follows Rabbi Eliezer in this case. And actually, b'kol makom meaning in all places. Amar Rabbi Yeshua al raglav v'amar. Rabbi Yeshua stood up and he said, and this is the line that often gets quoted from the story, lo b'shamayim hi, meaning the Torah is not in heaven. The Torah is not allowed to be decided in heaven. This is actually a quote from a pasuk in Devarim, chapter 30, verse 12. Most people, right, you know, this is the part of the story that they talk about. And then the Gemara says, my lo b'shamayim hi. What does it mean when it says it's not in heaven? The Torah was already given from Har Sinai, right? Which basically means that it was given to people and it's going to be decided by people. In a way, God let go of the Torah when God gives it to the people. And most people stop the story or if they repeat the story, this is where they do it up until. And they say the point of the story is to say that halakha has to be decided by the majority and halakha is decided by people. But really, it's taken terribly out of context. And I think you can learn that piece of the story from here, but that's not really why the story is brought here. The Gemara then goes on and says the following about Rabbi Yeshua's response to the bat kol. Ein anu mishkichim bebat kol. We don't pay attention to a bat kol. Shekavar katva bahar Sinai b'Torah. Because God already wrote in the Torah at Mount Sinai, acharei rabot la'atot, according to the majority, you shall be decided. And so his point is that we're going by the majority. Rabbi Eliezer's opinion is not the majority. And then it goes on to say, Ashkechei Rabbi Natan le'Eliyahu. Rabbi Natan once met Eliyahu Hanavi. Amar Leh, and Rabbi Natan said to him, Ma Avi Kutcha Brichu Bahi Shata. What was God doing at that moment when Rabbi Yeshua rejected the bat kol? Amar Leh, Eliyahu said to him, Kachayech Ma'amar. The Holy One was laughing and said, Nitzchuni banai, Nitzchuni banai. Now notice this is the same word that's used before where Rabbi Yeshua says, Im tamidei chachamim minatzchim, right? And so here it's saying, my children have prevailed over me, my children have prevailed over me. In other words, God in a way is happy because he sees that humans are deciding the halacha based on how it was given to Moshe at Har Sinai. And it stands, even if they're making a mistake, but still the halacha stands. And so again, this is the part of the story that most people start with. They end with. And this is, the part that they want to emphasize. And before I go to the aftermath, do you want to add anything here?
I think the only thing I want to add is that I think there's a reason that people kind of abridge the story and focus on, I mean, people do focus on the part that they want to talk about, right? But this idea that it is fundamental to the nature of Torah and Torah Shebaal Peh, oral law in particular, that there is a human component and that God can say, Yitzchuni Banai, right? Like we're doing it right if we have kind of triumphed over the strict letter of the law. I don't think it's because people are trying to get out of things as much as to recognize that the law is not, that the Torah in general is not rigid. I mean, there are plenty of times it is rigid, but that the format of it, that the essence of it involves some measure, and obviously there's all kinds of dispute, right, over you know, what that measure is, but some measure of human involvement, and it's built into the system because otherwise we wouldn't have, listen to the rabbis. The rabbis are the human component, right? Like it's not as much as the luchot were engraved in stone. It's not exactly engraved in stone.
Exactly. And I think, right, it's a good part of the story. So you see why people emphasize it. But now we have to get to the second half. Amru oto hayom hevio kol tarot shetihir Rabbi Eliezer. So what happens on that day? All the Chachamim collected all of the things that Rabbi Eliezer said were tahor. You know, not just talking about this oven, but anything that he said were tahor. Usrafam ba'esh, and they burned them in front of him. That was a way of showing that they thought that it was tameh. The nimnu alav the birchuhu, and they voted on him and they excommunicated him because they were upset with him because he was being very rigid and stuck to his opinion and wouldn't go with the majority. Amru mi elech v'yodiyu. And so then they said, who will go and tell them that he's been excommunicated? Amr lahem Rabbi Akiva. And so Rabbi Akiva, who remember is a third generation Tana, and was one of, he learned both with Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. He says, I will go and tell him, right? Shama yelech adam she'eno hagom v'yodiyu. Because maybe somebody, an unfit person will go and tell him. Denim samachriv et kol ha'olam kolo. And if that happens, Rabbi Eliezer could bring about the destruction of the entire world. Now, remember, this is Rabbi Eliezer who made all these miraculous things happen. The tree got uprooted. The water went backwards. A bat kol came out. So they're nervous. They're scared. They're excommunicating him. But at the same time, they're very scared of Rabbi Eliezer. Ma'asa Rabbi Akiva. What did Rabbi Akiva do? Lavash chorim benita tev chorim. He dressed in black clothing and cloaked himself in black. The Yashav Livnei Berachok Arba Me'ot. And he sat before Rabbi Eliezer at a distance of 4 amot, because if somebody is excommunicated, you can't go closer to them than 4 amot. Amar lo Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said to him, Akiva Yom Yumayim. Akiva, what's different today from other days? Like, why are you dressed in black? Why are you sitting so far from me? Amar lo, Rabbi Akiva says to him, Rabbi Kimidumet Li Shechavirim Bidelim Mimech. My teacher, it seems to me that your colleagues are removed from you. When he heard this, Rabbi Eliezer tore his garments and removed his shoes. V'nishmat v'yashav al gabei karka, he slid off his chair and he sat on the ground. Zaglue nav d'maod, tears flowed from his eyes. Lakach olam, the world, lakach olam, the world was smitten. Shlish b'zeitim, ushlish b'chitim, ushlish b'se'orim. A third of the world's olives, a third of the world's wheat, and a third of the world's barley became ruined. The Yeshamrim, and some say, even dough that was already in a woman's hand became spoiled. So this had major consequences that the Chachamim decided that the only way to deal with Rabbi Eliezer was to actually excommunicate him. And then we have another brisa that says what happens afterwards, Tana. Ach gadol hayabo toyom, a great blow happened on that day. Every place where Rabbi Eliezer set his eyes went up in flames. This should remind you, obviously, the story of Masechet Shabbat of Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai and his son when they come out of the cave and they burn everything with their eyes. But Rabbi Gamliel hayab b'tzfina. Rabbi Gamliel was in a boat when this happened. This is Rabbi Gamliel II. Amar alav nachsho l'tabo. And a big storm threatened to drown him. Amar, he said, k'midumeli she'en ze ela b'shvil ze Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. It seems to me that this is only because of Rabbi Eliezer ben Hyrcanus. Amar araglav v'amar. He stood on his feet, Rabbi Gamliel, and he said, Ribono she'olam, God, galui v'yadu alifanecha. It is well known to you, shelo lichvodi asati. I didn't do this. I didn't allow Rabbi Eliezer's excommunication. Remember, he's the nasi, for my own honor. Velo lichvod beit abba avasiti, and not for the honor of my father's household. Ela lichvodecha, but I did it for your honor. Shelo yibu machlokot b'Yisrael, so there should not be disputes in Israel, right? They shouldn't, you know, proliferate. Nachayam mizapo, and so the sea subsided from its rage. And then finally, it concludes with this part of the story. Ima Shalom. So Ima Shalom, Devetu de Rabbi Eliezer. She's the wife of Rabbi Eliezer. Achte de Rabban Gamliel Habe. And she's the sister of Rabban Gamliel. Okay. And Ima Shalom is really one of the few women that we see mentioned by name in the Gemara. And so what happens? Me'achu Masav Elech. From that incident onwards, Rabban Gamliel excommunicated Rabbi Eliezer. Lo hava shvaka le Rabbi Eliezer lemei pil alape. She did not let Rabbi Yochanan fall on his face. What this means is the part of davening that we say after Shemona Esrei called Tachanun, she did not allow Rabbi Eliezer to say Tachanun. We know that Tachanun is a part where we sort of plead for God's forgiveness. And it's the worry was is that he would become very sad and upset or dwell on what happened to him. And somehow he would end up killing Rabban Gamliel because he. And so what does it go on to say, right? Hahu yoma resh yaracha habe. One day she thought it was Rosh Chodesh, when Tachanun is not said, but achlif la bein male lechaser. But she confused a full month with a deficient one, right? We know some months are 29 days, some are 30 days. So she miscalculated the month and she thought it was Rosh Chodesh, and he wouldn't be saying Tachanun anyways. Ika damri ata anya v'ka abacha, some say abava. Some say there was a poor person who came to the house right when Rabbi Eliezer was about to say Tachanun, apikle rifta, and she took bread out to him, ashtachay denafa apne. But either way, the point is that she comes back, either when she thinks it's Rosh Chodesh or this incident with the Ani, and she basically finds Rabbi Eliezer saying Tachanun. Amra le, she says to him, kum katlachi, get up, you're killing my brother. Ade nafke shipura mibet Rabban Gamliel deshachi. Meanwhile, while this happens, an announcement goes forth from the house of Rabban Gamliel saying that he died. Amar la, Rabbi Eliezer says to his wife, Minaya died. How did you know about Rabban Gamliel's death? Amar le, she said to him, Kol mikublani mi beit avi abba. I received this tradition from the house of my grandfather. Now remember, she is Rabban Gamliel's sister, so they come from the house of King David. Kol ha-she'arim ninalim chutz misha'rei ona'a. All the gates of heaven are locked except for the gates of wrongdoing. Okay. And so again, that goes to exactly the part, Anne, that you read, right? That the only tefillot that are answered are the tefillot of somebody who has been wronged. And so the real point of this story is to really talk about how terrible it is to basically commit wrongdoing against a person with words. And that's basically what happened, Onat Devarim, to Rabbi Eliezer. And when he finally was able to cry over it, he actually was responsible for the Nasi, for Rabban Gamliel II's death. And that's really the main point of the story, is to talk about how seriously Ona'at Devarim is. And I think often with the problem with only focusing on the Lo B'Shamayim Ki part of the story is, I think you make sort of the protagonist the wrong person. Everybody thinks it's Rabbi Yoshua who's the hero. But actually the hero of the story is a tragic hero, but the hero is actually Rabbi Eliezer.
So I want to say something, I think maybe a little more radical, if I may, which is that I might have thought that there's some kind of chutzpah, right? Some kind of onat devarim, some kind of takedown happening in the statement, lo b'shamayim hi, between Rabbi Yeshua and God, right? The idea that lo bashamayim, that the Torah is not in heaven, and the human being participation is essential. And I feel like, you know, if we were all there in the moment of that story, then I feel like everybody's on tenterhooks to find out, like, what's going to happen? You know, is there a lightning bolt going to strike him down because he's had the chutzpah, the gall to say this, right? And instead, we get the story of Nitzchuni Banai, of God laughing and with pleasure, you know, recognizing that he's bested him, so to speak, that this is, in fact, accurate. So I feel like, on the one hand, the whole context of Onat Tevarim is essential here. The idea that words can really take exploit somebody, right? That words can really steer somebody into a bad path. And I think that that's exactly, everything you've said, I think, is exactly right. Except for, I think that then when we come back to this kernel that's at the heart of the whole, you know, beginning and end, it's really there in the middle to say, we do also have a way with words where we kind of stick our necks out sometimes, and where it's not exploited, it still might require daring, and it's risky, and then maybe God will say, Nitzchuni Banai, that in fact we've gone on the correct path. It's not, I feel like it's a little more complicated than. I don't want to knock either. The Gemara clearly knocks Rabbi Eliezer, but I kind of feel bad.
I disagree with you. I don't think the Gemara knocks Rabbi Eliezer. I think the point is that, yes, Rabbi Yeshua, you were right, but it's the aftermath. It's how they treated him afterwards. That is the problem with the story. They were correct in saying we go with the majority. I actually think the Gemara treats Rabbi Eliezer very beautifully and very sadly. And it's the point, that's why you can't read the story without that second half. The point was the excommunication. Why did they have to gather everything that he said that was tahor and burn it? Remember, he's the disciple of Beit Shammai. Rabbi Yeshua is the disciple of Beit Hillel. And we know from the Mishnah and Edyot that the whole thing was that even though Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel disagreed with each other on very fundamental things about Tumen Tara, on statuses of women, if they were considered married or not married when it came to Yibam, they borrowed each other's dishes, and they allowed each other to marry into each other's houses. And it looks like come the next generation, this gets taken to a totally different level that was just not appropriate.
Yeah, okay. I'm a Kabbal that. I accept that. I think that what you're saying dovetails nicely with what I was trying to say also about the drama.
Yeah, and essentially what I find fascinating about this is I think you kind of have to contrast it to that story in Brachot where Rabban Gamliel gets deposed but eventually does get reinstated eventually, even though Rabbi Eliezer, and shares the Nasi with Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah. Here he dies as a consequence of what happened.
Yes. I think that we can't ignore that, right? It is most striking point about the people who do cut the story short. You know, how can you ignore that?
Okay. Well, we could talk about the story for much longer. This is one of those stories that once we started this Daf Yomi project, I was looking forward to do. And we'd love to hear from learners what they thought about the story. If the story turned out to be different than what they had learned previously. That's our DAP discussion for the day. Rank us, review us on all major podcasts. Thank you to Rabbi Michelle Farber for hosting us on the Hadron website. Let us know what you thought about this DAP and our Talking Talmud Facebook page. And until tomorrow, go and learn.